It's the Popmatic Podcast for March 18th, 2015.
Beware the Ides of March.
This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out.
I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mike.
Bill.
Jeremy.
On this episode, Mike explains what the Ides of Smarch is. Mike explains what the Ides of March is and why we'll be talking about Roman stuff today. We'll get to that later. On today's show, we're going to introduce two new concepts. We'll see how well this goes over. So we've done this unofficially, but we're just going to make it official. Sometimes we disagree with someone. This sort of has become a colloquialism, Johnny No Brain. And when we disagree with someone, we say, I don't mean to bring you down, but for an example, you can go back to our Best of the Year Movies episode 2014. Yep. I was talking about how much I enjoyed Maleficent, and Amanda was like, you know, Maleficent is my favorite Disney character, and that movie sucked. So now we're going to have a special card that each podcastee can play during each episode, the I don't mean to bring you down card, and when it's played, you will hear this.
Don't bring me down. I don't want to bring you down, Brian. But...
You planned it already?
Whoa. Don't bring me
down. But what if none of us? What if we all agree with each other this time? Or what if we don't?
Harmony is good, man. Yeah.
Did I just play it?
You did. I did it already.
Oh.
I blew it.
Wow, you should have used it strategically toward the end. Right.
So did I say that there were two new concepts?
You did, too.
Concept number two, we're each going to have a snob card, which we can play once per episode.
I'm excited.
So I can't remember which episode it was, but Amanda was talking about...
I love that I'm your example.
Yeah, I know. Poor Amanda.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, go Amanda.
Well, for the first...
my antagonistic relationship with Amanda.
Everything she did wrong.
Can one of those snob? Guns has
I'll
a bullet
you,
in it.
I'll trade you mine. Don't bring you down if I can have your snob card.
Okay. All right.
You coined the phrase. The first new concept you coined the
yes!
phrase. What more? If you're on a show, what more success is there than if you coin a phrase?
I know, you got your catchphrase.
Screw you guys. I'm popular.
I can't remember the episode. Amanda was speaking about how she was a little bit excited about the Into the Woods movie that was coming out, and Bill, in the most hilarious voice I've ever heard Bill do on the podcast, says, I saw it on Broadway.
That was pretty amazing, actually. I saw it on Broadway.
And I said, whoa, you just threw the snob card down. Which is kind of funny because Bill has really deep knowledge of cinema history and the craft of movies. He's very humble about it, but his approach is usually, you know, very populist. So it was funny to hear him go there. So we're going to try to gamify this a little bit. And if someone uses their snob card, you will hear...
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
So if you don't get it, just listen. All will be made plain. What in the heck is the Ides of March?
Well, Brian, the Ides of March is when Julius Caesar, conqueror of Gaul and Britain, was destined or was prophesied to die. His wife had a dream, was all like, you know, hey, don't go out today. I think you're going to get stabbed and stuff. He's all like, pish posh, woman. I'm going out.
Dead direct quote.
I'm paraphrasing both the play.
Is that in the Shakespeare play?
This is the mic version.
Pish posh.
Shakes stuff. And he got stabbed to death by Brutus and Cassius and assorted other Roman censures. But, you know, Ides and ancient Roman times meant, you know, the 15th of any month. Anyway, I thought I would seek that into a ancient Roman series of mysteries that I quite enjoyed. The Marcus Didius Falco Mysteries by Lindsay Davis. Ooh. I was going to go with I, Claudius, but I haven't seen it in a few decades. But you should totally check that out.
We might get back to that.
Yeah, because it's amazing. Interestingly enough, that there actually are a bunch of different mystery series set in the Roman period, mainly to do with like the later stages of the Republic, where you know Caesar was taking power and the triumvirate was taking power, and you know corruption and vice ran rampant in the streets and that sort of thing. But I would like to talk about all of them, but we don't have enough time today, so I'll just focus on my favorite. The Falco mysteries are set during the reign of Vespasian, who ruled. They're set during the years of the 70 through 77 AD. Marcus Didius Falco is an informer. Informers in real life were basically like investigators that you hired during a court trial to like dig up dirt. But in the novels, it's more like a private investigator. In the first book, The Silver Pigs, he meets Helena Justina, a senator's daughter. They eventually start going out and solving crimes together. And it's kind of like a third man meets Nero Wolfe kind of thing. Like she would like stay home and like help him out with like bits of the case, you know. Or she would like go out and like interview women, because in Roman times there was also, you know, unmarried women were also kind of like not supposed to hang out with men at all. Eventually Davis would do like research into various areas of Roman life and spend an entire book out of it, which I thought was a lot of fun. You know, you get to learn about, you know, like in the book Three Hands in the Fountain. is a murder mystery that has a lot to do with like Roman plumbing and like fountains and that sort of thing. It's like, oh, cool. Like,
I love a good plumbing mystery.
Plumber's crack attack. And,
it's a new subgenre.
Yeah. Given the amount of weird mysteries we have, that would surprise me.
Okay, there's like knitting mysteries and baking.
Baking. There's one that we got recently devoted to it. Not just a cat that solves mysteries, but a ghost cat that haunts a psychic mystery.
Jesus. Oddly specific.
Real estate ones too, I think.
I would say that those are all just variations on cozy.
Yeah, they are basically just cozy mysteries. And Al Roker writes mysteries too. They're all weatherman themed. Yes. Yeah. All the action in a book called A Body in the Bathhouse takes place in Fishbourne Palace, a recently discovered Roman era palace in Britain. That was kind of cool. There's a light-hearted, kind of silly tone to the series, which I like a lot, unlike the other Roman mysteries, which are almost all gloomy and dark, and, you know, with the fall of the Republic, what's going to happen with the rise of the Empire, and this one's more like, you know, goofy and silly. It almost kind of reminds me in tone of, like, kind of like Doctor Who, and that, like, he's kind of hard to take seriously until something really important happens, and he gets all frowny face, and, like, you know, gotta, you know, get that murder, frowny face. There's a spinoff series with their daughter, Flavia Albia, but I haven't read that yet, so I can't really comment on it. Anyway, and then it's off to Amanda. What have you got today?
So, I'm not going to play my snob card yet. You're going to have to wait for it. But the book I'm going to talk about is a little bit heavier than my usual picks. I am going to talk about Dear Inglorious Physician. It was written by Taylor Caldwell. For those of you who don't know, Taylor Caldwell was a female American writer who wrote through the better part of the 20th century. This book was actually written in 1959, and she has written a ton of large historical fiction books. This one happens to be about Lucanus, who you might know better as St. Luke. He was actually Greek. He grew up in the household of his stepfather, who was the Roman governor at Antioch, as in, you know, the holy hand grenade of. He studied...
Plus one to nerd card.
Yes! he studied medicine in Alexandria, and then he began traveling across the Roman Empire. And we're talking the first century AD, healing the sick. And in time, he hears of Jesus, but they never actually, like, he never gets to see him in person. And instead, he begins traveling to all the places where Jesus preached and talks to a lot of the people that he preached to and talked with. He was not one of the original disciples. He does talk to Mary and probably John, because John was taking care of Mary at that point. And so what all these travels become the Gospel of Luke. And Caldwell does a great job kind of contrasting the decadence of Rome at this point versus the new world that's just emerging of Christianity and how that all comes about. She was actually born in Manchester, England, but she moved to the United States when she was young. She was married 4 times, which for the time period that she was living in was kind of amazing. 3 divorces, 1 death. And some of her other books include one about Genghis Khan called The Earth is the Lord's. There's a Pillar of Iron that was about Cicero, who was a Roman senator. And she is really meticulous in researching, and that's what I liked about her book. She tells a good story, but there's also a lot of great detail that sets up life and what life was like and kind of what expectations were during the time period that she's writing. So I definitely recommend Taylor Caldwell. So if you're looking for historical fiction, definitely check her out.
Okay. If you want to take a trip to Rome, but you don't have the cash, may I recommend the 1953 movie Roman Holiday, directed by William Wyler and starring Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn. The basic premise is a bored princess escapes for an adventure and falls in love with a newspaper man.
Audrey Hepburn now welcomes you to Rome as the captive princess who goes out on the town to have some fun, with Greg as the bewildered bachelor who winds up with a royal blush.
It is very unusual. I've never been alone with a man before, even with my dress on. With my dress off, it's most unusual.
Yes, it's the real lowdown on Her Highness when she turns into a pixie on the prowl, letting her hair down all the way to find the kind of forbidden excitement she's always longed for.
Tell you what, why don't we do all those things together?
This is the movie that put Audrey Hepburn on the map. It was her first starring role. Interesting story, Gregory Peck was the major star, and he demanded Audrey Hepburn be given equal billing. The studio reaction was, well, Gregory, that's generous of you. And he said, well, I'm not really being that generous, because when this film comes out, she's going to be a major star. And he was right, and she won the Academy Award for her first major role. I did an interview with William Wyler's daughter, Catherine, and she said after every movie, her father would do a change of pace. For example, before he did Roman Holiday, he did Carrie, which was based on Theodore Dreiser's novel that starred Jennifer Jones and Laurence Olivier. And Carrie is really uncompromising. It's an extremely depressing movie. And
Catherine said
when she saw it, said, why did you want to make such a depressing film, Dad? And he said, that's what Laurence Olivier kept asking me. So, he went and did Roman Holiday, which was a comedy and a beloved comedy, too, and has dramatic principles, but it's nothing like Carrie. And just one more fun fact, Audrey Hepburn's final movie was Always, and that was directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Richard Dreyfuss. In 1987, Richard Dreyfuss did a movie called Nuts, and one of the supporting actors in that movie was Leslie Nielsen, who starred in Creepshow.
All right!
So,
six degrees from Creepshow. Make sure you see Roman Holiday and Jeremy.
I would just like to say, Roman Holiday was on my short list to talk about today, too, because I saw it a couple years ago. It is a really good movie.
And it's filmed on location, too.
Yeah.
So it's not studio-bound. It's location filmed.
I'm going to play my snob card.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Snob card.
And say that I love that movie, but probably would never talk about it on the podcast because it's classic Hollywood and happy, so I have to act, I have to act snobby, pretend like I don't like it.
Whatever, dude. But
Francis plays persona card. Yeah.
His stage face.
Yeah. If copping to your snobbery is the right way to use the snob card, the same way that I was using Jump the Shark wrong and didn't know what the word segue was.
Also, you mentioned Toy Story as well. Like, I don't know if that's...
I mentioned that I hate that movie.
That's true.
Isn't the real reason, but I'll just riff on this. Yeah. That kid Sid from Toy Story, who's kind of the villain, that was pretty much me when I was a kid. All right.
You melted toys for fun?
I did that.
You were a monster.
I burned some Barbie hair in a basement when I was a freshman in high school.
That was scary.
Okay. Man, I believe it, my toys like gold.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
As well,
when I said pass to
Jordan. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes. So if I think about Rome, I start thinking about invasions. And I talk a lot about comics, as we've never mentioned on this show. It's never confused us. I don't think anyone's discussed
graphic
the
novels.
Fact that
you
I
mean?
Talk about. I don't mean graphic novels. I mean comics with an
snap card?
Yeah, snap card.
Yeah, that's my anti-snap card. Actually, can you do the snob Pop. Thing but play it in reverse?
I could take the Grey Poupon sample and pitch it up so it's funny.
Okay. Got any Grey Poupon, guys?
Pardon me. Have you any Grey Poupon?
They're like comic books.
Yes.
Graphic novels are for big kids.
That's
right. Graphic novels are for babies. I like comic books.
Anyway, Jeremy, what were you saying?
So, comic books, eh? So, I didn't see this coming.
I do talk about them. It's a surprising fact. And it seems like I mostly talk about American comics because I'm a pig. Comics have like a mainstream renaissance, I would say, going on right now. And I think part of that is propelled by an influx of lots of international titles. It's not an invasion. America is mostly impervious to invasions unless you count the Beatles, Pokemon, and all those European settlers who thought they found something new way back in the 15th century. So if you approach American look what a pig I am. If you approach comics with an American flag covering your eyes, then you're doing comics wrong. There's lots of there's a whole world to choose from, especially and in that whole world you can go to France. This is a sometime punching bag for Americans whose knowledge of the country is based solely on starchy foods, but it's also home to the annual Angoulême International Comics Festival, which is like the con of comics, not to be confused with Comic-Con. You can hear the smile on my face.
You're the only one laughing.
I'm laughing because I see it in print.
I like terrible puns. Stone face.
Write it down and read it aloud. You will smile all day.
Stone face. Dr. Hibbert, you laugh at everything, right? Yes, I do.
Listening to you read that joke was hilarious.
Yes.
And the obvious joy in your face.
Sorry.
Just kind of amusing.
I just wrote it down. It wasn't really even a joke. It's just sort of, it is what it is. It's a coincidence. It's a coincidence. See, that's a joke.
Oh,
and that's
man.
Horrible.
These
anyway,
Jeremy Portmanteaus is Germantos or something.
Germantos, that's good. I have horrible toes. Would you like to see them? Comics are very serious business in France. That's where Smurfs come from.
And Smurfs are French?
Stop card.
Pardon me.
They're from Belgium.
Oh.
No, they're French.
No, they're Belgian.
Are
we
you
put
sure?
them under the number for Belgian comics.
Really?
Oh, yes.
I remember this because they're the only
Belgian comics
well,
we have.
That's not
Snob
true.
Card.
Snob card.
Pardon me.
Tintin.
Oh, yeah.
Or Tantan.
Tantan was before my time. I've been only doing the Smurf card.
Well, damn it. I thought that was like...
Rival Smurf card.
I even looked that up and I got it wrong. Well, what does this have to do with Rome,
anyway,
everybody?
Yes.
That was where I was going.
Oh, I think I know where we're going.
So I got three paragraphs of context with 14 paragraphs of interjections. And finally, I have arrived at my point. France had some experience with those pesky Romans back in the day, and you can read about it in Goscinny and Uderzo's Asterix comics. These comics follow the adventures of Asterix, a Gaul living in the year 50 BC. His is the only remaining village in Gaul not under Roman occupation, and he fends off legionaries with a potion, with the help of a potion, courtesy of the local druid Getafix. And he's helped by his friend, the very large Obelix. So, this is about a drug-addicted little person who fights off Romans a generation before Jesus was born. You can find this comic in the children's section. There's a kind of ancient...
you know, for kids.
Yeah. That was a good joke. By God. I knew it.
One.
Yes.
All right.
I'm back
you get
at
it
zero.
Back.
I'm back at zero. So there's a kind of ancient Hogan's Heroes vibe with this comic. Asterix is constantly thwarting Roman soldiers, and there's a lot of spouting of Latin phrases like ipso facto, and there's other shenanigans. The art is really great. There's a kind of, the cartooning is sort of like, this sort of cartoon that's like in constant motion. Like it has a real animated quality to it. It's really great. And you see that motion whether or not you're under the influence of Asterix Lobster and Mistletoe Potion or not. So I read Asterix Omnibus Volume 1, and it features the first three Asterix adventures, Asterix the Gaul, Asterix and the Golden Sickle, and Asterix and the Goths. You can play Bela Lugosi's Dead here if you want. And there have been a ton of movies made of these comics. I think, 13? None have been released in America, at least so far, that I'm aware of. The comics have been translated into 100 languages, including our own. It doesn't have the same recognition, maybe, as Tarantara, but they're worth checking out. What about it?
That terrible pun's not good.
I say it every time, and I'm like, why am I saying it?
Hey, I never know how to end these things. So yeah. Like that thing I just said is really good.
What I do
you
got
think?
More no. text here.
We're talking about things you can get from the library. I think that saying check it out at the end is perfectly okay. You've been spoiled by the Dr. Steve Brule show.
I think, well,
because. Hey, I'm the Steve Brule of this podcast, so I'll say check it out as much as I want. Guilt-free.
You guys are a bunch of hunks.
Guilt-free, just like Dr. Steve Brule. Like, too ignorant to know that I'm being a fool. Okay.
You rhymed. You just rhymed. You just did a little rap there.
I'm the rapping librarian.
and I'm here to say, you can check out my books today.
So, I'm...
I'm doing pretty good.
I'm going to edit that out for your benefit. I'm glad I'm going after you. It's actually a really good segue to what I wanted to talk about. But just in-game correction, according to the People's Encyclopedia, the Smurfs are in fact Belgium.
Yes, okay. Belgium. The Smurfs are Belgium.
The Smurfs are Belgium. Much like waffles.
The Smurfs.
Wait, is that an option? Can we do waffles?
The Smurfs.
Well, we should do a Belgian episode.
You know, I can go back and edit it so I say Belgian, and then you won't even know.
So, is your stop card melted yet?
I think I've already pulled it like three times.
We do a Belgian episode.
You need to hold that because you're just like, boom, boom.
I don't know what that says about me.
Yes, okay. I realize that. I get it confused because I'm a pig-headed American.
I thought the Smurfs were American, so you beat me. So.
Now, if you want to see something fun, the very first Smurfs graphic novel we have is where they zombie plague hits the Smurfs. They all become purple.
The purple
and they
Smurfs.
Start biting each other. It's like 28 Days Later with the Smurfs, and I'm like, this is for kids? Like they're running at each other.
It's pretty crazy.
It's like, whoa.
That's
and they get cured eventually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Never mind.
Okay, back to Roman times. Okay, a lot of people don't know this, but the Roman Emperor Magnus Maximus was Welsh. He was a Roman general living in Britain at the time. He gathers up all of the other like Roman warlords and leaders in Britain in 383 Common Era, right? And he takes them into what was then Gaul or France, usurps Gratian, he becomes the Western Roman Emperor. Now, 5 years later, he gets killed when he tries to invade Rome and become the Eastern Roman Emperor too. But because of that, Magnus Maximus, or Magsyn Wellig, the Welsh way to say it, plays really big in the history of ancient Wales. So much so that in the Book of Welsh Legends and Folklore, which is the oldest prose in Britain, the Mabinogion, the dream of Magsyn Wellig, that story is in there. And then also a lot of Welsh dynasties claim to be descended from him. When Magnus Maximus pulls all of these Roman generals, military officers, warlords out of Britain, a lot of people say, well, this is really the beginning when Rome kind of abandons Britain as a occupied territory.
Right,
sort of the beginning of that unofficially. Magnus Maximus said he was going to come back, but he never did. So he does that. Wales nominally remains Christian and Romanized, and what we now call England, or at least the southeast of what we now call England, right, is invaded by Saxons. Right, and it's pagan, and they're all a bunch of barbarians. And the Welsh, at least the gentry of the Welsh, the rulers, right, they feel like they are civilized and have a connection to a culture that's bigger and larger than the Saxons. And that actually helps form the beginnings of a Welsh identity separate from English identity. Where can you read about all this fun stuff?
That was my question, Brian. Thank you for asking.
Where can you read about all this fun stuff? Why, A History of Wales by John Davies. Last week or a week or two ago, I had mentioned A Basque History of the World by Mark Kurlansky. In a lot of ways, Davies' A History of Wales could be called a Welsh history of the world. Sort of like the history of the world through a Welsh lens. Of course, everything that I talked about is in the first, five chapters. But it is interesting, and I think for a lot lot of people, it's hidden history. If you wanted to go back to the original source, you could go to Julius Caesar and read about the Gallic Wars. Okay, he has a little bit to say about Druids in Britain, probably not true. Or you could go back even further to Tacitus, right? Who has these accounts of the Druids in Anglesey. He says that the Welsh island of Anglesey was like the head of where the Druids lived, and there's these accounts of the Druids acting like crazy pagans and Roman legions being scared, but then they found out that they died just like everybody else. A lot of people question that. Now, Tacitus and Suetonius, right, who wrote The Lives of the 12 Caesars, okay, their work gets novelized later by Robert Graves, and it becomes I, Claudius.
Right.
So these Roman historians later get their work gets popularized in novel form by Robert Graves and I, Claudius, which is fictional autobiography of Emperor Claudius. It's a great book, by the way. Now, it also was turned into a great miniseries where Derek Jacobi played Claudius.
Yeah, my highest recommendations. This is one of the best miniseries ever made.
You know, all of Robert Graves' historical novels are great, especially if you're interested in ancient history. Hmm. But just to bring this back home, so Derek Jacobi also played the Welsh monk Brother Cadfael in the mystery series, which is my favorite of all the BBC mystery series. So check all of those out. Started in Wales, ended in Wales, whole bunch of Rome in between. Jeremy.
Yes.
What's tickling your fancy this week?
Tickling my fancy? I read Kim Gordon's Girl in a Band. I think I had mentioned it in our episode talking about books that we were looking forward to in 2015. And it's a memoir by the former bassist from Sonic Youth. It's a good book. It starts sort of with the end of her marriage to fellow Sonic Youth member Thurston Moore and the end of the band. It focuses a lot more on that than I thought it would. It sort of shades how she talks about the rest of her life growing up in California and having a brother with a severe mental illness and then sort of plunging into the art world and then finally ending up in New York and starting a band. I read some reviews of it after I read it just to sort of see what people were saying about it. And someone, and this was an Amazon review, so you sort of take those with a river, an ocean of salt, I guess. Yeah. People were complaining about, like, name dropping in it because she dated Danny Elfman when she was in high school. And she, like, had an association with this Larry Gagosian, who's, like, a major art dealer now. And she had dealings with him when he was sort of nobody. He was, like, schlepping, like, prints in cheap metal frames on the street or whatever. And, and you know, she mentions knowing Kurt Cobain, and she talks some trash about Courtney Love and stuff. But
I thought that would be kind of like the point of a memoir, though.
Well, that's sort of the point of a memoir. Yeah. But also, it doesn't come across as name dropping, like, and then I met Iggy Pop.
You wouldn't know who he is.
It's like if you were in a band that has a certain level of success, you are going to be running into people. And then also, like, yeah, it's kind of weird that she was friends with Danny Elfman before he was Danny, you know. But it doesn't come across like that. Also, if you've had any sort of experience with Sonic Youth and a listenership or if you've listened to the band or ever read interviews with them, like they have always been sort of a name-dropping sort of institution in a way by sort of like name-checking bands and either that were their contemporaries or people who were around before them. They always had this sort of like cool factor about them, I think was just what drew me to them as a young lad. So it doesn't come across as douchey, if I may say that.
Beep.
Can I play the douche card?
Let's say it four more times.
I don't want to see what that one looks like.
Okay,
so,
but I'm not touching it.
Girl in a Band.
And then it's noisy. It could be like a Messengill commercial.
Some say it brings back freshness anytime.
What's to be your Amazon review for Girl in a Band on Amazon? This wasn't very douchey, even though she name drops a lot.
Five stars.
It's name dropping only in the sense that yes, these are people. But like, if this was like, I worked with a guy named Joe who was an artist. She didn't make up these associations. It really did kind of draw me in. Bill?
Well, tickling my fancy is The Movie Crypt, and that's a podcast that is hosted by genre filmmakers Adam Green and Joe Lynch. It's a very entertaining podcast in which they interview writers, directors, actors associated with genre filmmaking. Granted, it's more towards the horror genre. I like it a lot. The movie Crypt is good old nuts and bolts interview that are informative and entertaining, even though Adam Green tends to get carried away sometimes and won't let the guests talk. So if you enjoy the just good old nuts and bolts about movie making, especially genre movie making, just Google the movie Crypt and enjoy.
Have you seen Holliston?
Yes, and they talk about Holliston.
Oh, cool. I heard that the girlfriend of one of them like showed up on an episode. I've been meaning to listen to that.
Yeah, and also there was also a reunion where they had all four cast members.
Oh,
and
cool.
Stuff. And very entertaining.
I like that show.
Yes, I did too.
So, Tickled by Fancy this week is something I discovered late Monday afternoon. Ooh, Susan, the other cataloger, and I were doing our usual thing and making fun of romantic suspense novels when she mentioned...
Making fun of, wait, what?
Romantic suspense fiction, you know.
Shut up! Tough is what you said.
Shut up, Carl.
You know, you shut
up. It's like, manly name is like, you know, could dress and field a gun, like, with his eyes closed, and he, you know, flosses his teeth with the tendons of his fallen enemies, but Kira... You know,
I'm scared about this.
Is like, anyway,
I'm sorry, so I interrupted.
We were having
you.
Fun.
Go ahead, continue.
And you know, and she mentioned that, you know, I came with the name Rust Tungsten, which I thought was quite manly.
That's a good name.
But she said that the manliest of manly names has to be Steel Savage, and I was like, who? And she was like, the illustrator for Edith Hamilton's mythology, Steel Savage. And then I needed about a 5-minute break, for my mind was completely blown. I could not handle human speech. For names that awesome don't actually exist in real life. And then I had to look it up in Wikipedia, and turns out his name is Harry Steel Savage.
So, anyway.
So his name is Harry Savage?
Yeah.
That's why he changed it to Steel. Hello.
So, you know, so I looked him up, you know, so I don't sound like a dummy on this Tickle My Fancy segment, Savage. I mean, he drew in this really cool Art Deco style, and his illustrations for mythology are really great and, you know, have remained seared in my brain since I was a little kid and I read mythology, especially the one of the Minotaur, which looked more like a centaur with, like, horns of his head. It's really cool. Like, I mean, apparently that's how it's described in actual mythology and not what you think. You know. In addition to Edith Hamilton's mythology, he also illustrated books of Bible stories and the Arabian Nights. And he also drew propaganda posters during World War II. Wow. So, Steel Savage. Roar. Now I need, like, you know, Lady Edith, you know, Pinkmore or something.
He was a knight, he beast or steel.
Wow.
Wow. You don't look at these all day.
No, I said that.
All day,
no,
every day.
No, sir, I do not.
I was going to say, I think for Susan and Mike, who are the library's two, like, primary catalogers of books, I imagine every genre is just books by the pound. I imagine they could riff on every genre.
Oh, urban fiction.
I can play urban fiction game.
We have some good times, you know, just kind of. Yeah. And since Linda's out for the week, we get to...
You guys are just going crazy. Yeah. Linda
she's
is
just,
the,
like, tossing books down there.
Linda is the cataloging manager, and the week we're recording this, she's on vacation. So I imagine that Susan and Mike are just in their underwear, and there's
giggling my little girls.
Bowls of cereal, like little cereal laying around. And
chatting all day.
Smoking cigars.
Work? What's work? Fish pot. So we got Amanda.
Okay, well, I'm going to play my snob card.
Ba-bow.
From on myself.
Pardon me.
Whoa.
Well, okay, so it's Lent, strategy. Right? And a lot of people tend to give up stuff for Lent. Like, Catholics won't eat meat on Fridays. And, like, my parents don't eat after 7 o'clock during Lent. I kind of did that, but more so what I did is that I kind of made, like, I kind of picked several heavier books to read during Lent, like, kind of like, I don't want to say Bible study, but kind of like that kind of idea. And one of them is The Confessions of St. Augustine. And I've actually wanted to read this one for a couple years, but it kind of scared me because it's exactly as heavy as you would expect. I mean, it's fairly, you know, deep. It was written in the year all the way back to 397 AD. It's kind of considered the first autobiography of the Western world that remains in existence today. And it was written in Latin, so obviously I'm reading the translated version. I don't read Latin. It's really interesting because St. Augustine, he was born in Carthage. Carthage, and he worked as a teacher of rhetoric in Carthage. He moved to Rome and then on to Milan to teach. But he was a kind of wild and crazy guy, if you will.
I thought this was the guy. Yeah, he's the one who had like a really like crazy youth.
He would go out, and I assume they would get drunk. There's one episode he talks about they stole a bunch of pears from the farmer's tree, not because they were good pears and they wanted to eat them. They just wanted to throw them at each other. So, good times in Carthage.
People have always been the same.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, then obviously he goes through this big conversion, and now he's writing, there's actually a collection of 13 books, and they think that these were for popular consumption. They're not just like a memoir. Like, he actually wrote this to help other beginning Christians, I guess. And I'm about halfway through, but it's really, I had read somewhere that it has a really modern feel, and it does. Like, a lot of the things he's writing about in 400 AD still translate into today. It is hard to read. Like, it takes me about 2 hours to read 40 to 50 pages. So, I mean, you really have to, like, I have to turn TV off. I have to sit there. I have to read and I have to focus. But if you're looking for something a little bit more, it's going to take a little work out of you, but it's going to be worth it. I definitely recommend Confessions of St. Augustine. I'm just now kind of getting into the point where he starts his conversion. Like, I've been reading all about the exciting youth fun. it's definitely interesting, and I'm kind of excited to see where it goes. So,
I would play my don't mean to bring you down card, but I think what I'm going to talk about will just kind of solve that.
I did that check.
But it's been many years, mm-hmm. but I've read that book and I didn't like it. As a matter of fact, it made me. It probably had the opposite effect on me than the author intended. So,
dang it!
With that,
I should be a crazy party animal instead of a saint.
Brian went back to the start of the state.
So, I'll edit that out.
Can't edit out my brain.
I've tried.
Mike knows the truth.
Right. I just got to throw this out here. I was going to mention this when I was talking about ancient and medieval Wales. If you want to learn Welsh and you want to learn Latin on Transparent Languages, the app that we have, the service we have at the library, you can learn those two languages.
Oh, that's cool. I want to learn Latin.
Which is awesome. And one of the reasons why we have Transparent Languages is because it offers more languages, so you can learn arguably obscure or dead or dying languages. So Latin is dead, but Welsh is dying. You could help keep it alive, and all that history that I was talking about, like, help keep it alive and learn Welsh by Transparent Languages. I'm sure that'll just crash their server with people logging in to learn Welsh.
I'm gonna go log in right now.
But back on track, host. On Boing Boing the other day, Peter Berbergall wrote this article called Cave Evil, a Game of Brutal Necrodemonic Dungeon Warfare. Before I get into what this article is about, it's just to say that the library has his new book, Season of the Witch, How the Occult Saved Rock and Roll, which was tickling the fancy of both Jeremy and Crystal. And then I saw this article, and it's by the same guy. It kind of got me excited. I started reading it, and it was about this game called Cave Evil. And the guys who designed it, that'd be Nate Hayden, Jochen Hartman, and Matt Brinkman. It's a game where you play an evil wizard in a cave that commands a horde of demons, and then it's a war game where you fight other evil wizards in their hordes of demons. Its aesthetic is extreme black metal, and then when they launched the game, they had all this tie-in work, like short films and noise tapes and t-shirts and art you could buy. And this is so freaking cool, I'm still recovering. And I kept trying to figure out like how I didn't know about this game.
That's pretty awesome.
Because Matt Brinkman is a musician that I know. I've seen him like play like shows and hallways of radio stations and stuff, but that was a couple years ago. I realized that I probably didn't hear about this game when it came out because I have a job. Usually being involved with the noise music scene and having a job, they're not like, they're not totally mutually exclusive categories, but often, right? I didn't know this either. The game that these guys made before this was called The Mushroom Eaters, where you played a shaman that would eat mushrooms and then like go on a journey in the spirit world, right? And you'd fight monsters and avoid bad things and learn good things about life, you know, when on your journey. But when you played the game, you wore 3D glasses. So when you encountered these beings on the cards, they would be 3D when you're sitting around the board. Oh, that is... Boom! It's like that Philip K. Dick story, Perky Pat, but it's a board game. Oh, it's amazing. But what I loved was, like, Berber Gall's article was actually about his history with games and the relationship between fantasy games and war games. So fantasy games would be like D&D and dragons and monsters and wizards and fairies, and war games would be like historical simulations of actual battles, very technical, very complex, long, detail-oriented. And what he talked about was how Cave Evil is actually a really good mixture between, like, a fantasy setting but the mechanics of a war game. You guys know I'm into game history, so I really appreciated this article. So yeah, Cave Evil, what is it? It's a game of brutal, necro-demonic dungeon warfare.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that? Come on.
I've got that article.
St. Augustine. Okay, Bill,
poor Bill.
Just relax, okay? So this is a minor thing. You said you download things on Hoopla, and actually most things on Hoopla, you just stream them. You don't download them.
So throwing down the stab card.
So that's a minor difference, but it could matter depending on your internet connectivity. I had mentioned Jude Law, speaking of robots. I never tied it in to what I said about artificial intelligence. In artificial intelligence, he plays Gigolo Joe, the male pleasure robot.
I thought that's what he did in real life.
Typecasting.
That has been primarily my relationship with Jude Law throughout his career, but like I said, I like that movie.
He was great in it. I mean, when he wasn't on screen, it went down, in my opinion.
I enjoyed that movie very much, and he's in it.
He's like, you're my Ryan Gosling.
I think that Jude Law probably doesn't like Ryan Gosling at all.
Ryan Gosling's
they're probably besties
looking.
They
took like, their position as the token handsome guy of the moment.
That's right. Totally, right? Yeah.
They each had like 15 movies out at one time.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Hottest guy on the planet. Like, well, they always say that there's It Girl. Like, for a while, like, yeah. Jude Law was the It guy.
Yeah.
And now who's the It guy?
I've heard he hasn't aged well. Like, apparently in Dom Hemingway, that was, like, a thing in a lot of the reviews that, like, he's got wrinkles now. He's less handsome.
It's like, he was kind of pretty, though, like a girl. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
well, that seems to be what the ladies go for.
I don't mean to say...
From what I hear.
Yeah. I'm more of a Gosling.
All right.
Baby Goose. Baby Goose!
I like Ed Hardy. He's cool.
He's a little butch for me. Okay.
I'm not even going to comment. I'll just let you go.
I'm perfectly comfortable saying.
Tom Hardy. What? Tom Hardy.
Ed Hardy.
Not Ed Hardy.
Correction.
I knew who you meant.
I did too.
I knew who you meant.
I was like, something wrong about that. But yeah. I don't know what.
Oh, wait. It's those crappy t-shirts.
Yeah, this terrible t-shirt guy. No. He's surprisingly old. He's like way too old for me.
All right. So for more information about all of these actors and books about them with just their beautiful symmetrical faces,
you can go to www.library.nashville.org.
And our music today is
by Adam Dean.
Awesome. And if someone uses their snob card, you will hear...
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
So if you don't get it, just listen. All will be made plain.
Also clear.
Plain?
Sarah Blaine and Joel.
I can play my snob card right now. It's from listening from Handel's Messiah, where it's like mountains will be made plain. Anyway.
I was going to throw it because you keep saying jump the shark in the wrong context, but...
Oh!
You know, I had to save it for
mustard
later, though.
Mustard on your face.
You know.
You're right. I did that time. Yeah, I totally did.
And a lot of times last episode.
Four before that.
Maybe one before that, too. I'm not sure.
It's only so far I could, you know.
So jump the shark means that...
something you really liked, but you don't anymore, and there's an event that caused you to not like it anymore.
It means Fonzie's water skiing.
Yeah,
over
Fonzie
sharks.
Water skiing over it sharks.
Means,
right,
it means
and
like
we're done now.
Something outlived its not usefulness, but yeah, it's like, yeah, like it, yeah.
See, no, okay, this
like
is
like a straw that rode the camel.
Yeah, it's like
this
it's
is
like,
good.
This is
no,
the
this
definitive
is,
mark of when the quality dropped off.
This is good. Yeah. This is another Sieg segue moment for Johnny No Brain.
Is because, that your snob card?
I don't know. I guess I have to now.
I thought jump the shark meant like you had an idea that was like you thought was like ahead of its time and useful and good, but actually nobody cares.
No,
because what
but
it
you
is,
had an idea that you were trying to save something and you went too far.
It happened because Happy Days was a very very popular show. Mm-hmm. It was
on
for
forever.
A long long time, and the moment that people identify as like this should have been killed is when Fonzie jumps a shark on water skis. Yeah,
did he? Was he even have his leather jacket?
Oh yeah.
On?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's water skiing in a leather jacket.
They're all sitting on the pier watching him.
Yeah.
Fonzie, there's a shark.
And so it's only a fairly. I mean, like within the last 10 years.
Yeah, probably, something like that. Yeah, there's a website that the guy started that was popularized it. I think it's jumptheshark.com or something.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
The tangles of my ignorance are very fascinating for me because I thought. You meant I was using it wrong in the sense that I was sort of using it to mean you're jumping the gun.
Jumping the gun.
Like,
yeah.
Just wait,
yeah.
And then we'll... All right, okay, I get
I
it
do,
now.
I do like that, though, using it in that context, sort of like how if someone says, this ain't rocket surgery, you know what I mean?
Oh.
Like,
yeah.
It's sort of,
I guess I could post
it's a,
say
it's
that maybe
sort of
Ryan was trying to be amusing and I was,
yes.
Like, not...
stupid.
Yeah.
I was being pedantic, I guess.
I almost used that word last week, but I didn't feel comfortable using it.
I don't have to use it because
I like pedantic.
Just
I don't like
way.
Saying pedant or pedant or you know, a person
sorry,
who's pedantic.
Sorry.
I don't know how to pronounce.
That was my problem because I wanted to say pedant.
I don't know how to
but,
say that.
Like
so
I don't feel I didn't feel
yeah,
comfortable
pedantic.
With it.
That's
yeah.
It.
So.
See, PodMatic podcast where you learn new words.
The pedantic podcast. Changing the name.
I wouldn't watch that.
I would. Yeah.